Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Welcome to What's Eric Eating? Culture Map's weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map food editor Eric Sandler. I have Jason and Daya and Cole Wong from Danette coming up in a little bit. But first, I'm joined by my co-host this week. She is the owner of Avondale Food and Wine. Mary Clarkson, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I am well. I'm happy to be here from the Rocky Mountains.
Well, thanks for doing this. Let us dive right into the news of the week. Topic number one. Matt Harris and I talked about Julep winning the James Beard Award for Outstanding Bar Program on last week's episode, but I wanted to give you the opportunity to comment because I know that you're a Julep fan, and I also thought you might have a perspective as a woman restaurateur. Obviously, Alba Huerta is the owner of Julep. I don't know if you have that whole sisterhood thing going on or not with her specifically, but I know you do feel a certain kinship with female small business owners. And so I just thought I would throw it to you for just a minute or two. Yeah. What do you think this, what does it mean for Julep, and what do you think about it?
I mean, first off the bat, just regardless, it's amazing for Houston for us to have this kind of exposure for James Beard. Yes, it's a woman-owned business, but really it's just such a great thing for Houston. I'm up here in Aspen on the downslope of Aspen Food and Wine, and Alba's been up here all weekend doing seminars and doing demonstrations, and she's really well-received up here, and I think this will help her exposure nationally and internationally. My good girlfriend Kate McLean and I are up here, and she's very close with Alba. We just couldn't be more proud, and everyone has been talking about it at Food and Wine up here. You know, Chris Shepherd has been up here, a lot of other restaurateurs and chefs that we know and love and respect, but it's really a time to celebrate Alba, and I think that's amazing.
Yeah, you know, I was actually thinking about this, and I don't think I mentioned it in last week's show, is sort of how long Alba has been working to get to the point where she might get this kind of recognition. You know, she competed, she was the runner-up in Speed Rack in 2012. You know, she served on the board of the Southern Foodways Alliance. She wrote a cocktail recipe book that was well-reviewed and well-received.
Tales of the Cocktail, New Orleans, she's always been involved in that as well.
Right. You know, all of these things, you know, even locally, I'll have what she's having, all and the Southern Smoke Foundation, all of these things, like, you know, brick by brick, you sort of build this, you build this career where you start to get more and more attention, and, you know, and it doesn't guarantee you anything, but it puts you in a position for success. And so, you know, it's not an overnight achievement. It's a career defining thing.
It's 10 plus years. And, you know, Alba's been in it on the back, you know, behind the bar and back in it farther than I have been. But, you know, I look at our contemporaries. I look at Kate McLean. You know, Kate started at Tony's 10 years ago. She's now at the helm as partner. Alba took this long to get to where she's at. I mean, this doesn't happen in a year or two. I mean, it really starts to hit when you've been in this business 10 plus years, and it takes all of that time and dedication to get to this. That's why this is so impressive for her and for Houston. We should be really, really proud.
Absolutely. All right. Topic number two, Agricole Hospitality has finally announced their plans for the former Blue Line Bike Lab space next to Cultivare. It is going to be called Easy's Liquor Lounge. They brought in Matt Tanner, formerly of Pappas Restaurants and Anvil, as a partner on the project. Essentially, I'll let people read the whole article in Culture Map, but essentially it's kind of a retro-styled throwback, take some inspiration, easy for me to say, from some of their favorite dive bars, you know, very comfortable, very casual, but with food and cocktails that are done at a level that you would expect from Agricole, which is Cultivare, 8 Row Flint, Miss Carousel, Indianola, and Vinny's. So really, like, you know, good spirits, fresh juices. Mary, I say all that to say to you, does Easy's Liquor Lounge seem like a logical addition to the Agricole portfolio?
I think it does. I think it needs to make sure it's diversified enough from 8 Row Flint. You know, I don't think of 8 Row as a dive bar per se, but it's a very popular bar with that hard corner at 11th. You know, it's got a big patio. I think I always love a dive bar atmosphere. I think for me to want that kind of vibe or have that kind of vibe, it's going to need, I hope its pricing is moderated, right? I hope it's not Cultivare cocktail pricing. I hope it's a lower entry price point for that. I think the Heights has just been blowing up with restaurants and bars. So they already have a nice foothold in that neighborhood. And I think they'll be well received because of that.
Yeah. And just to be clear, like, they understand that you don't create a dive bar, right? All you can kind of do is just make the place feel really lived in already. So it's vintage furniture that Matt Tanner has been buying at, you know, thrift stores and antique shops like all over Texas, you know, 80s and 90s era neon, and just dartboards, pool tables. And then you just create like a menu of very familiar, very well executed drinks. I mean, I think, you know, this is mostly, as I understand the plans, it's mostly an indoor space, whereas 8 Row is really defined by its patio, and the food offerings will be, you know, completely different, right? 8 Row really is built around that, those tacos with those house-made tortillas, and they do some other, you know, kind of Mexican and Tex-Mex stuff. The idea behind the food from Easy's Liquor Lounge is like the kind of stuff you would find in a crock pot at a real dive bar, just like a good version of it, not a version that would turn your stomach. Hot dogs, chili, queso. At least that's the plan. You know, we'll see what happens when they actually open and people start coming into the place. And of course, you'll also be able to get pizza from Cultivare, which seems like a good idea to me. But I just the way that they sort of talked about, you know, the influences and the expectations and the atmosphere they're trying to create, I've been looking forward to learning more about this bar. I mean, they signed this lease in 2019. And so it's been a long time coming. And it just sounds like a really like casual, fun place to hang out. And so I agree with you. I think price, you know, will determine part of the experience. There's already kind of Cultivare is kind of a high-end, has a high-end cocktail program. Permission Whiskey down the street is certainly doing that really well and getting a lot of attention. This needs to be, you know, maybe not like Onion Creek, but kind of in that kind of come as you are, very casual mode. And I think they know that. And so, you know, I don't know what the pricing is going to be like, but they're certainly aware of the kind of atmosphere they're trying to create.
I'm excited for them to come to the Heights and open up an additional location. I really think they have an identity that's very well established in the Heights, and looking forward to another one of their spots.
Absolutely. And then let me move on to topic number three, Shoot the Moon, a self-serve beer, wine, and cocktail concept from Anvil co-founder Kevin Floyd and chef Dax McNair. Has closed after less than a year of operations. I had Kevin on the show a long time ago to talk about Shoot the Moon. He had this idea that it would be family friendly in the sense that self-serve allows you to control the pace of your experience. So you don't have to look up, look around for a server when you want to refill. You can just go get it. And then when you're done, since you've already paid, you can just leave. And you don't have to wait for a server to tab you out. Curiously, there are a couple of self-serve concepts that have made a go of it. There's Moonshine Deck, which is in Shady Acres on 20th Street, where all the other, you know, there's just a ton of bars and restaurants that are doing really well over there. You know, Drift Bar, Wicklow Heights, the original McIntyre's, that's all kind of booming. And then there's Roots, the self-serve wine bar. That's maybe not far enough east to be East End, but maybe just a little bit too east to be like really in the heart of what I consider Edo. Talk about neighborhood pedantry right there. But obviously two areas with a much younger demographic than Spring Branch, where things need to be kind of family friendly. So Mary, I say all that to say to you, do you sort of agree with me about this self-serve thing? Do you think it's viable in other parts of the city, but maybe not in Spring Branch? Or is it something about Shoot the Moon that was just not compelling?
I mean, it breaks my heart that this concept closed so early and maybe didn't get a chance to get its legs underneath it and evolve and figure out who they were. I have a lot of thoughts about self-service in general. For me, especially in a post-COVID, I know we're not out of COVID, but in my mind, I want to say post-COVID world. I think when people go out, you know, everything's gotten very expensive to dine out, to drink out, just you see it everywhere. But I think when people go out, they want to be taken care of and they want an experience. And I think when you take away that interaction with your bartender or your server, you know, at least with the wine, it's, you know, when I go to other wine bars and having run wine bars and wine shops myself, it's, I want to interact with that person on the other side. And I think, you know, I think maybe that hurt them here. It's hard to say. I know other concepts have been successful with this, but, you know, wine bars for me and bars in general, I want to interact with my bartender. So I think, in my mind, I think that hurts. But then you look at Roots, and Roots seems to have done really, really well. Even though, you know, these type of concepts are more expensive in some ways, rather than you just grabbing a bottle of wine at a wine shop or a wine bar and drinking there. But it makes me sad for them. I think Spring Branch is an appealing neighborhood. I mean, I'm a attorney and a real estate broker. I have clients that are always looking in this neighborhood. And I think the density is only increasing and it's growing rapidly. But I think that the prices landlords are asking in Spring Branch, when you start to see them be higher than Montrose or higher than Upper Kirby, definitely higher than the East End, it's, you know, these landlords don't understand that your rent has to be a certain number of your total gross in order for it to work. And I think maybe he bit off more than he could chew, and it makes my heart break for him. I'm very sad about it.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, I've known Kevin some over the years. I was excited about Shoot the Moon. I thought the food was pretty good. I thought the mix of wine and beer and cocktails was pretty compelling. I mean, I thought it would be appealing, but you know, they said it just didn't draw enough sales to continue to be viable. And so, you know, I do think self-service is still very new in Texas. I think people are still getting used to the idea of it, but it's successful in other cities, right? That's why people are trying to bring it here. And so I do think there's a place for it. I'm not sure that this was maybe the right place for it. Maybe it's better somewhere else, but you know, I feel pretty confident that, you know, Kevin Floyd's got a track record of success. He opened Anvil. He was Chris Shepherd's business partner through just a ton of growth, you know, turning Underbelly into Georgia James, launching 1/5, opening UB Preserve, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I think he'll be back in some role or another, and I'll be excited for whatever his next project is.
Yeah, everybody gets, you know, a second. He'll have a new, you know, new birth, a new life, and I hope we'll be able to see him soon. I know closing a business is never easy, especially as early as this one. So looking forward to seeing what's next for him.
Yeah, and then, you know, that development in Spring Branch has a lot more coming. I mean, we've talked about this off and on over the last few months, but Hondo, the hand roll concept in the Heights, Blind Goat, Christine Haas, Gastropub at Bravery Chef Hall, and Ginger Ramen are all slated to join Fijus Barbecue in this shopping center. So I think Spring Branch remains a really appealing kind of new neighborhood, along with places like Bel Air and the East End for you know, more and better independently owned restaurant concepts. It's just a matter of finding something that fits the neighborhood and presents itself well and gets people in the door.
And I think the more concepts that come in at the same time, it's going to help everybody else out. So more density, people can hop from one restaurant to another on a weekly basis, and it'll lift everyone up with the opening of other businesses.
Absolutely. All right. And then topic number four, I don't want to linger over this too much, but we should congratulate March. The Robb Report named it one of the best new restaurants in the country for 2022. It joins another Texas restaurant, Meridian in Dallas, on that list. Mary, I mean, we've talked about, you and I went to March last year. We've talked about it as both a place to eat, but also a place to drink. We really like their cocktail lounge quite a bit. What do you make of lists like this? What do you make of the Robb Report recognizing March?
Lindsay Brown is very good at her job. Robb Report, you know, the writers for that are always up here during Aspen Food and Wine. This is where a lot of connections are made for restaurants in Houston, and we get a lot of press based off of the connections you make up here. And I think March deserves to be on that list. I think there's not a lot of restaurants of that caliber in the city. We don't have James Beard, unfortunately, yet in Houston. So, you know, Forbes and Robb Report and these kind of publications, it means that, you know, our city gets more recognition, and anybody who helps do that for the city, I think is great. And, you know, it's March is able to have an amazing publicist, and that really does make a difference for you being able to get these press hits on a national and international level. So yay for Houston, and congrats to March. It's a beautiful restaurant, exceptional service, and I love their drinks, and always a fan to go here, especially in the lounge.
Right. I just to say, we do have James Beard here, right? We have James Beard Award winners, and
yes,
we had two James Beard finalists. We don't have Michelin. I think that's
sorry,
what we were.
That's what I meant.
Not yet. Not in Texas. Not yet.
I'm totally hungover today, but yes, Michelin guide is what I meant. Yeah, James Beard is as close as we get to that, and everybody always asks you and me and everyone I know, like, why isn't Michelin in Houston? And until they come, we'll take all the awards and recognition we can get from these other publications.
Right. And the short answer is that Michelin, you know, they moved from just doing the Bay Area in California to the whole state of California. They just added three cities in Florida because they were paid to, right? The state of California paid Michelin, the state of Florida, and those city convention visitors bureau equivalents paid Michelin to subsidize the cost of having the inspectors come in and rate those restaurants. So, I mean, if Texas wants that kind of recognition for our restaurants,
we're going to have to pay for something other than just Top Chef.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, Houston First and its equivalent organizations in Dallas, Austin, San Antonio, El Paso, and whatever at the statewide level can pony up or not. I want to have a conversation about whether that recognition is meaningful, whether we would benefit from it as a city. I don't want to have it with you today.
Fair.
But obviously, you know, the people who listen to this podcast are inside enough to have probably seen the post on Allison Cook's Instagram where that whole argument went down last weekend. And so, you know, if you missed it, I'm sorry, because it got deleted. But, you know, we're not going to have that conversation today. But and then just one other thought, because you mentioned Lindsey Brown, who is their publicist and Chris Shepherd's publicist, and is a very successful restaurant publicist in town. Yes, you know, it's important for anyone who represents restaurants to have relationships with members of the media, but you can lead that horse to water, but you can't make it drink, right? If March didn't deliver, right, she could get the Robb Report to come to March when they're in Houston looking at potential candidates, but if March doesn't deliver an outstanding experience, then they don't get on the list.
No, so, absolutely. I think the hardest part of the battle is even getting a concept in front of these publications. And obviously, I mean, March is going to deliver. So good for them.
Right. Right. All right. I am going to say that does it for the news of the week. We'll be right back with our restaurants of the week. Stick around. Mary, for our restaurants of the week, I want to talk to you just briefly about Street to Kitchen, which is not a new restaurant, obviously, but it did win big in the 2022 Culture Map Tastemaker Awards, taking both Restaurant of the Year and Rising Star Chef of the Year for Chef G, Benchuan Painter. Mary, I happened to go to Street to Kitchen this past weekend, but I just wanted to see if you had been in since the Tastemaker Awards.
Yes. I mean, when I'm in Houston, I'm not going to say I go to Street to Kitchen every week, but I certainly go at least twice a month. And as I said on our year-end recap show, and you corrected me, not wrongfully, but you were like, what's your favorite restaurant of the last year? And I'm like, Street to Kitchen. You're like, Mary, it opened the year before. I'm like, I don't know. I have COVID fog. Everything seems to like roll together. It is my favorite restaurant right now. I just think that the food hits so hard and it's so authentic. And, you know, if I'm one to three people, I like to sit at the bar. Otherwise, I like to sit at a table, but I don't really order when I go here. And I'm not the only person that does this. I just tell them, like, cook whatever you're feeling today. And, you know, maybe I pick my spice level based on who I'm with and everything else that day, but I am absolutely in love with this restaurant. I love it. I love everything about it. I have no criticisms.
it's funny. I had a couple of minor service quibbles. I respect why a restaurant wants to control, like I understand why a restaurant wants its customers to order their whole meal at once, because then they control the pace.
Yeah.
But as the diner, sometimes I want to control the pace. And so, you know, we ordered appetizers and the guy goes, we ask that you order everything at once. And I go, no, I'm not going to do that.
Eric, come to Aspen. They make you do that at every restaurant here. It sucks, but.
Well, it's my meal and my money, and you're in the hospitality business. And Street to Kitchen is not the only restaurant that does this. I mean, I know Blue Dorn does this. I mean, it's at all price spectrums. And you know, I hadn't made it that far through the menu. And then the other thing, and this is such a minor quibble, but we got the mango sticky rice and the server puts it on the table and goes, we recommend that you eat it with a spoon so you can get all the components in one bite. Don't tell me how to eat. Like, you know, like I'll figure it out, man. Like, I say that with love, because the food there is so delicious. And I've known Graham Painter, who's Chef G's husband, and Chef G for a few years now, you know, since they were doing pop-ups in other people's spaces and serving, they're still at the farmer's market every Saturday. And I see them regularly. And I have so much respect for everything that they've achieved. But as they grow just a little bit, right? Like, and it's not just Graham waiting tables anymore. You lose just that smidgen of personal touch. And so they just have to manage that. because I want nothing but, you know, I would love to see them get into a bigger, grander space that allows them to do more menu items with a bigger staff. You know, in my mind, I want this to be Houston's Lotus of Siam, a destination worthy Thai restaurant that serves just, you know, incredible food that you can't get anywhere else. And they're on that path. And I want that for them. And so they just have to think through some of this stuff. But I mean, I will say we had a crispy rice dish that was a special with some Thai sausage in it that I just absolutely devoured. And then they were doing an off the menu special of like chili seasoned watermelon with crickets on top. And it's just like, it was sweet and salty and crunchy and a little bit spicy and all in one bite. Like you pick these individual cubes of watermelon up with a pair of chopsticks. And it's just like mind blowing how much flavor Chef G packed into that little bite. And so, you know, nothing about my experience, my recent meal at Street to Kitchen would dissuade me from going back or recommending it. I recognize that, you know, winning the Taste Baker Award and all the good word of mouth they've gotten, not just from Culture Map and this podcast, but just from, you know, every food writer that's ever been there that I know about. There's just a little bit of growing pains, and they just gotta be thoughtful about how they manage that. Cause I want everyone's experience at Street to Kitchen to be as good as my experiences are.
Food and Wine magazine is doing a Houston, I believe, October issue. So I hope that when they come to Houston, they pick up restaurants like this. And I think they're set for bigger and better things. And I think ultimately a bigger space for them, whether it's for this concept or another, I think will really help them grow into a space that works for them and works for people like you and I. So, but for a first go out of the gate, I just think this space worked for them and it's amazing.
Yeah. And then I noticed, you know, it's been about 3 months that they've had their liquor license. And so, I mean, they're still BYOB, you can, but they have appropriate wines to pair with your food. And I had a Cremant, my friend had a Riesling. You know, Graham's being really smart about the kind of wines he's bringing in. And I just think that's such a nice component of the experience to have good choices.
He has put together a small but very tight list that pairs really well with the food that they're making. So I'm happy that they have this aspect of their dining there now when they didn't used to. So I think it makes a more cohesive dining and drinking experience.
Yeah, he told me he's going to add a couple of grower champagnes. I know that's right in your wheelhouse.
Oh, don't worry. That's like all I talk about when I'm there. That and Rieslings, but he's got the Rieslings unlocked. So give me the grower champagnes and Miss Mary's going to be happy.
All right, Mary, I'm going to say that does it for the restaurant of the week. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Eric.
And I will be right back with Jason and Daya and Cole Huang. I am joined this week by the owner and chef from Danette, a new Vietnamese restaurant coming soon to the Heights. Gentlemen, let me introduce you separately so people can hear your voices. Jason and Daya, one of the owners, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Eric. How are you?
And then Chef Cole Huang, thanks for doing this.
You're welcome. Hi, Eric.
Jason, let me just start with you, because it's been, I say welcome back, but it's been a long time since you've been on the show. I think you came on in 2019, right around the time that you opened Hondo, your sushi hand roll restaurant on 11th Street.
That's right.
And so much has happened. I mean, obviously it's a long time, but just kind of, let's start with just a quick overview of kind of where is Hondo now? Like in terms of the way the restaurant is doing, you know, has it met your expectations? Has it exceeded them? I mean, how do you feel about how people have received? Because when you opened, you know, the hand roll concept was new to Houston. and it wasn't something people were used to. And so I thought we would just start there.
I think that Hondo has definitely exceeded expectations. I mean, I had high expectations already for what we were going to do because of all the work we had put in, and also knowing that, you know, or feeling that Houston was ready for this kind of concept. But in the almost 3 years since 2019, when we first came on here, it has gone to a place where I could not have really imagined it would have if it wasn't for everything that has happened since, including the pandemic. It just made you change the way you think about the business and restaurants, the whole hospitality. And I think that it's helped us honestly change for the better. Hondo right now, with now Kanpai Club next to it, it's just become like such a great part, I think, for the neighborhood, and everyone, all of our regulars and everyone in the Heights has been super, super supportive of what we've been able to do and bring to the, to 11th Street.
Well, yeah, I mean, and I think that you're thriving is impressive, considering that, you know, essentially, you know, the whole experience is built around sort of sitting shoulder to shoulder around a yeah. U-shaped counter with people, you know, for kind of a quick, you know, I don't think I've ever had a meal at Hondo that lasted more than about maybe 45 minutes. So it's, you know, it's designed to be kind of high volume in and out. What do you sort of attribute that success to? Because I do have the sense that, you know, maybe if not for kind of your efforts and Chef Mann's efforts, like it could have gone another way.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things where we really couldn't plan for and explain. When we first opened, it was, I don't know if you remember this, but we used to have people queue up like in a corner against the window. And that kind of created like a really busy energy in the restaurant. And, you know, it almost kind of like pressured people to, oh, maybe I need to get up because I'm done eating now. And then so the next people can come in and sit, right? But once the shutdown happened and we couldn't really have, you know, we had all the capacity restrictions and no one really felt comfortable like being shoulder to shoulder, like that whole waiting against the window thing has gone away, right? So then partly why we built Kanpai Club next to it is to alleviate or to give people a place to wait and enjoy some stuff while they're waiting for their seats at Hondo. COVID also helped us with our to-go business, right? Because when we first opened, to-go was not a really big thing with Hondo. But once we switched to that, people started to see that, you know, we could put out really great product through a to-go vehicle. Also, another thing that kind of changed was, do you remember when we first opened, we used to have people fill out the menus with pencils, like they would grab their own menu and grab like a little golf pencil and
kind absolutely of absolutely
yeah, so that
dim sum style, as it were.
Yeah, so that kind of gave like a casual like approach or a casual feel in the restaurant. And now where we are handing the menus to the guests and we have removed those boxes now for people to mark their own thing, it's kind of more of a traditional sushi counter. So I think the casual perception has kind of gone away. And honestly, a lot of this time has been not wasted. We spent it kind of retooling the menu and offering, you know, different things. We now offer some sashimi and we have Japanese charcoal, and we're offering some skewers up there as well. So we've kind of grown very much into something that I didn't imagine that we were going to get to. I always thought it was going to be like In-N-Out, hand rolls, and a really cool bar. But it's so much more now. And I'm very proud of like everybody that's put in the work to make it what it is.
Yeah, I think that's a good kind of jumping off point for Danette. I mean, what you know, how did you sort of decide that a Vietnamese restaurant would be the next concept for you? Because I mean, I know the plan was always to do multiple concepts, but how did you decide Vietnamese was the logical choice?
Yeah, so it was kind of for Dinette, this was kind of a perfect storm situation for us, right? Yes, we had already planned on doing multiple concepts, and a Vietnamese concept, you know, kitchen and bar being one of them. And given that we are on just coming out of COVID, but still planning and working and doing things in preparation for when things kind of get back to normal, what would the next steps be for the company and concepts? And, you know, we looked in house and we saw, or we realized that, well, we've got and developed fantastic talent in house. And Cole, Chef Cole, who's going to be the exec chef that's sitting here next to me, he was already working with us at Hondo as both a bartender and a back of the house person. And we knew that he already had some back of the house experience, a pretty good amount of back of the house experience with Christine Ha over at Blind Goat and Xin Chow. And we said, okay, well, maybe we can do something here if all the, you know, the cards kind of come up us. So we started doing a little bit more planning, and then with the way that COVID has affected even, you know, real estate, you just start looking at spaces and say, okay, like, where are the opportunities and stuff like that? We started having a lot of internal discussions about what was going to be next. And the great list of things that we wanted to do, the Vietnamese concept made the most sense for a number of reasons. One, being in the Heights, there was kind of that opportunity to create or to bring a fun Vietnamese restaurant and bar concept into the area. And like, I'm a Houston kid, you know, Raymond, my partner, you know, we've known each other for a long, long time. And we grew up eating Vietnamese food at, you know, at a lot of the restaurants around town that had been around here for, like, you know, 30 years. But now that we've grown, we kind of felt like it was time for, you know, maybe to open up a restaurant that was Vietnamese, that kind of grew up with us, right? Or that's for us now to come and enjoy the stuff that we like to do.
Right. I mean, I think, you know, for a lot of, you know, people in their 30s and 40s, you know, especially, you know, if you don't have a Vietnamese background, you know, it's possible that I have this theory that, like, the first place you ate Vietnamese food is probably Mai's, right? Because you were out late and it was open. And so, you know, I just bet that it's like Mai's and Kim Son, or like the first places that people had, you know, dishes like pho and spring rolls. And then maybe they got to, like, a, you know, Cali sandwich or Lagervals or something for banh mi. But, you know, I do think that that was kind of a formative part of eating for a lot of Houstonians. And then, you know, now we're seeing all this, like, really cool, you know, kind of second generation Vietnamese restaurant, right? Certainly what Christine Ha and Tony Nguyen are doing at Xin Chow, and what Christine is doing at the Blind Goat, and
right.
You know, I think about Le Baguette, and even, you know, if you stretch it a little bit, like what the Blood Brothers are doing
in terms
of bringing those flavors to barbecue, I just, so excited. So I don't know, maybe Jason or maybe Cole, this is a chance for you to jump in, but, like, how do you sort of see Dinette, like, in relation maybe to some of those restaurants, and in terms of kind of this evolution of what we think of as, you know, Vietnamese food?
So what we want to do is to elevate all the classic Vietnamese dishes that everybody knew about. It's just not about pho or banh mi, that's a lot more. So we try to have more diversity on the menu. So people can eat and drink at the same time. So our menu has, like, small, medium, and large. So I have option for everybody. And that's what we are going to do. Hopefully, yeah, that answered your question.
I mean, I think in terms of how we kind of fit in the space, right, of Vietnamese cuisine now that, right, people are starting to really explore all of the things that there is to offer, you know, beyond pho and banh mi and stuff like that, especially with, you know, Christine's restaurants and La Baguette, even La Colonial to an extent, right? There, I think that what we're finding is a lot of these second generation chefs and second generation Asian Americans is they have so much to say, and they've experienced, you know, obviously the embrace that Houston has given them and their families. And now it's time to kind of showcase their own culture in their own way, but with a little bit of the flavor that Houston has given them.
Yeah, so Cole, maybe go into a little bit more detail. What are some of the dishes you're thinking about for the menu? Kind of how is that taking shape?
So we have a crepe, like a big crepe that I will turn it to a taco, which is familiar with you know, Houstonian people know what taco is. So that is my take on something traditional, but put it like more international so people know how to eat it. So what I'm trying to do with my food is it's easy for everybody to eat. You know, like most of the time, like April, people have no idea what the lettuce for, not just for garnish, but it's a part of the dish too. So I'm trying my best to show people the right way to eat Vietnamese food in, you know, easy way.
Well, yeah, and I think, you know, again, I think you're right. I think we've, as a city, as a dining culture, we understand that Vietnamese food is more than pho and banh mi, right? We're eating, you know, bu ban we or right, you know, ban ze o or, you know, whatever,
right.
So how do you kind of put, I guess what I'm saying is, so you're talking about a crepe, right? And I think people may have encountered that dish other places. So what are you doing to kind of put your spin on that to make it the dinette version of that dish?
So like the banh xeo, originally people use pork and shrimp, but like the one that we have, we're going to use like seafood, like different kind of seafood in there, which in Vietnam, there's a part of Vietnam in the middle of Vietnam, they use like different kind of seafood in the banh xeo instead of pork and shrimp. So like shrimp, squid, mussel, yeah, or like a medley of seafood. That's what I'm trying to do.
Talk about the egg roll, because egg roll is really cool.
So the egg roll, the one that we are making is gonna be like from the north. So the egg roll that we see everywhere at Mai's or at the pho restaurant is a version of the south. So the north is gonna look like a square egg roll instead of the roll up, like how you see it. So that's what I'm growing up eating because my family from the north, and this egg roll is gonna be my family recipe that I want people to taste. So in this egg roll, gonna have pork, shrimp, and crab meat. So I think the crab meat is gonna be the important ingredient to shine to make a big difference about the egg roll.
Right. No, I think that's a good point because, you know, I don't think I've ever seen crab meat in an egg roll before.
Right. So we use that in the north side.
Good. Okay. So that's really constructive. I mean, yeah, Jason, let me just pivot back to you. I mean, talk about maybe kind of the design, the aesthetic, the cocktails, you know, some of the other aspects of dinette that you're working on.
Okay. So the dining room is going to be, you know, in our normal or in our mind, everything that we want to do is like small, intimate, kind of discoverable, really cool spaces in Houston, right? That's what we find like Hondo is, and we feel like Compact Club is. Dinette is just like the next evolution in that. It's a little bit bigger. It's going to be about 53 seats. So the bar is pretty substantial with 17 seats, two large communals, 8 seats each, and then 7 tables against banquettes along the wall. A lot of Asian touches that you'll see that are recognizable, but used in, you know, kind of different ways that you don't normally see in dining rooms. It's going to have a little bit of an industrial feel, but with like Asian accents, if that makes sense. So our main big statement wall is a mix of framed caned webbing, that you kind of see in a lot of like Asian households and Asian decor and stuff like that. Kind of like the stuff you see in like rocking chairs or like other dining chairs. So there's a big wall that has framed webbing there. The louvre above the bar, like little shutters, right? That's kind of be used as a statement piece above the bar. And the dishes that we're using is kind of like mix and match style. A lot of the traditional Asian prints and stuff that you had seen, say at Mai's or any of the other restaurants that we go to, but not the plastic version, right? So these are nice like porcelain, ceramic dishes that had the same look, but when you pick it up and actually touch it, like this is nice stuff.
Well, and when people aren't dining there, you know, after being at the bars all night, you feel like it's less likely that they're going to throw it on the ground. You know what I mean? Like you can give people a slightly nicer experience if you assume that they're going to be closer to sober than not when they're right. when they're visiting you.
And our hours of operation are kind of going to dictate that, I assume.
Yeah,
we are definitely not the open till 4 a.m. Spot that, you know, we love Mai's to be. As far as cocktails go, I think you can expect the same kind of programming that we have at the other spots. You know what I mean? Like a lot of fun flavors, a deep dive really into what the flavors are in Vietnam. We've got to, without giving away too much, because I know that like it's all coming, but the cocktail menu is basically done. We've got a cocktail that actually uses red bean in it. So, you know, a lot of like the Vietnamese desserts, like the chia and stuff like this, like to use the shaved ice, even kind of desserts. So we're kind of pulling from some of those flavors, the jackfruit, the mangosteen, the red bean, the pandan, like lemongrass, all of these kinds of flavors are going to be used on the cocktail menu. And I think y'all are going to like what we put out, because we've worked super hard on it. And the things that I've tasted so far from our bar team are really, really impressive.
Yeah, cool. Let me kind of circle back to you. I mean, I know Jason mentioned that you worked for Christine Ha at the Blind Goat in Sin Chau.
Yeah.
What did you kind of learn from those experiences? What are you bringing to Dinette from your time working for her?
So, I mean, Christine is my like idol that I look up to for a longest time, and got to work with her at the beginning at the Black Goat was a dream come true for me. And Christine is like my big sister now. I would say like the palate, like we have really similar taste in food. I started at the Black Goat as a light cook, and I got promoted to R&D. So I came up with dishes with Christine, and we doing R&D most of the time. And yeah, I think that's all I can say.
Well, give me an example of a dish that you created together.
So it's still on the menu now. It's the lemongrass chicken vermicelli bowl. So that dish we worked together. So that is our recipe. Yeah. And we used to have the Vietnamese pizza, and that was a twist of mine on the pizza as well. Yeah.
So I know you mentioned that you're going to do Northern Vietnamese style egg rolls. Are there Are there other northern dishes that people can expect to try at Dinette?
For sure. So we have the turmeric cod with dill and scallion. Most like the jack-a-lavon. People at Vietnamese restaurant, they use like tilapia, but we're gonna use cod to have a better flavor to it and texture. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a nice upgrade. I mean, cod is in my opinion, a more luxurious, a more
correct,
meatier, premium sort of ingredient than tilapia.
Yes.
Are there other kind of dishes where you're going to do that? I mean, are you? I know, like for example, at Tsinchao they use Wagyu beef for the bo luklak. I mean, or the beef with broccoli. I mean, is that? Do you have similar ideas for Dinette?
So we do have a Wagyu beef skewer-ish. The Wagyu gonna wrap in the betel leaf. Betel leaf is like a heart-shaped leaf. And we call it bò lá lốt in Vietnam. We use like ground beef to do it, but we're gonna elevate the ground beef with the ground Wagyu. So make it more elevated.
And then Jason, let me turn back to you. Talk to me a little bit about Hondo Spring Branch. How did you decide that it was time to seek a second location, and how did you pick where you're going?
Yeah, this was coming, man. Hondo Spring Branch was something that Spring Branch, first of all, I think is kind of the newest part of it, right? We had always planned on expanding Hondo into other neighborhoods in Houston, right? Like this city is the fourth largest city in the country, and 22 seats isn't gonna cut it, right? Like there's so many more places to plant this thing. Spring Branch landed just as we were looking at different neighborhoods to put Hondos far enough from the Heights, but also, you know, kind of close enough to bring some of the Katie Memorial crew in. Group of customers in. And also we looked at everything that was happening in Spring Branch right now, right? Like a lot of people are going in there, and obviously the Dinette lease came first, but we signed this with Braun, and they had said, hey, we also have this spot over in Spring Branch and we're looking to put some cool concepts in. Are you guys interested? So then we went over to see their property over there, and that's where, you know, Fage's Barbecue was and Shoot the Moon is, and they already have a slow pokes out there and stuff like that. So we went to go look at the space and saw what they were planning on doing as far as development goes, looked at the area. And, you know, kind of made it happen. We were looking to go into a space that was also not as super developed as the Heights, right? Because with development comes things like higher rents, for example, right? So as long as we can make the economics make sense and the neighborhood seems right for this kind of concept, Spring Branch seemed like a no-brainer in terms of like a sophomore effort for Hondo.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, you talk about certainly Fiji's Barbecue and Shoot the Moon. I think isn't Ginya Ramen coming there too? And I know Christine's opening the Blind Goat there.
They are. I think Christine is doing a Blind Goat.
Yeah,
Blind Goat out there.
We've reported that. So yes, and
another thing too. I forget what it is, I don't even know what it is. And as far as Ginya goes, I believe that a ramen spot is going in the same strip as us, but as far as it being Ginya, I'm not sure.
Okay, but either way, it's becoming a very dynamic little shopping center for dining. I think from my perspective, it's going to be nice for you because it'll be a real destination for the whole neighborhood. You know, they can come to that one plaza and satisfy a lot of cravings.
For sure, the mix is definitely there. I think that these guys did a great job in and signing different restaurants to the space, to the whole plaza.
And relatively speaking, not a ton of sushi in kind of Spring Branch Memorial, right? I mean, I think that's to your advantage.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, just as any restaurateur is going to look at a different neighborhood to kind of go into, you know, these things definitely are taken into consideration, the competitive set, right? But you know, I think there's enough room for everybody. So that's not, it's not like the number one priority that we're looking at is if sushi already exists there. You know what I mean?
Sure.
But in the way that we do it, and you know, kind of the high energy dining room and the hand roll experience with the cocktails and sushi small plates, you know, all that kind of good stuff. It's always a good time. And if we can bring that to other neighborhoods in Houston, I mean, we're going to do it as long as people keep enjoying it, you know?
I mean, do you have a short list of like, I mean, you haven't even really started like construction on Hondo 2 yet, but have you thought about where the third one might go?
Yeah, definitely. I've thought about the third, fourth, and fifth one. For sure, man. But you're not going to get it right now.
Fair enough. Well, you know, I have to try. So let me just turn back to Dinette, and then we'll wrap this up. But like, obviously, you have Chef Cole, you have your general manager Mandy. Kind of, where are you in putting a team together? Because everyone I talk to just talks about how hard it is to find people to open a restaurant.
Yeah, this is not to beat a dead horse or anything like that, but yeah, putting together a team, open team, is we're finding one of the most challenging things of 2022, right? Like this would have been easier in 2019, obviously 2018, but that's kind of why, like, Mandy worked for us at Hondo, Cole worked for us at Hondo, and they're bought in, and we've invested in them to help them also kind of showcase their culture in a meaningful way for them, through Dinette, right? So a lot of our team is actually coming from Hondo, the leadership anyway. So the GM, the exec chef, they've all put in time with us. These are people we trust. Their body of work speaks for itself. And I think that that's important, and that's what we're about, just as a company's philosophy, right? Is to promote from within and really putting our money where our mouth is and, you know, helping them achieve their dreams. And no one really gets this opportunity, right? Like, not often do people get the chance to run open restaurants that, you know, that are kind of, they're given free rein in a sense to do what they do. And that only comes because they've proven to us that they can do this, and they have our full support. They have the full support of the company to do this. Raymond and I are fully behind them. But in terms of putting together the team, the top of the team, they've already worked with us. And then now it's about kind of showing what we can do and attracting other talent to come join us for this ride.
I think that's all well said. I mean, Cole, what are you looking for? I guess, you know, you're leading the kitchen for the first time.
Scary.
I'm sorry.
I said scary. Yes. You know, like, I work under Big Chef, and now I have to do something on my own. So I have to figure it out everything by myself. I have to get stuff, order stuff, vendors. So, I mean, it's a learning experience for me. It's a dream come true. It's just another door for me to do bigger things. So I'm excited.
Well, good. I'm going to say that seems like a good place to wrap this up, Jason, unless there's anything you want to talk about that I haven't asked you about.
No, I think that, you know, you touched up on kind of the update for Hondo, Dinette, Hondo 2 coming up, which 30 seats, this thing is going to be great. And then a unnamed bar also attached to it. That we're working on, but no, Always good to catch up, Eric.
All right. Well, before I let you go, we have to play the lightning round. Five easy questions, five short answers.
I try to get away from this, but.
Well, since theoretically I didn't go back and listen to your answers, but you know, you can put Cole to the test, you know, this time if you want.
No.
All right. Five easy questions, five short answers. Just say the first thing that comes to mind. Chef Cole Huang, what is your favorite ingredient?
I would say fish sauce.
What is the first band you ever saw in concert?
First band, I would say Maroon 5.
What is your fast food guilty pleasure? It has to come from a restaurant with a drive-thru.
Chick-fil-A.
Who is your favorite Houston sports figure, past or present?
No, I don't watch sport.
I strike out with that question like every 4 weeks. I should really find a better question. All right. And then finally, what is the newly opened Houston restaurant you are dying to try, but you haven't had time to visit yet?
I wouldn't say new, but Nancy Hustle. I've been wanting to try at that restaurant.
Yeah, it's been around for, it's turned five this year, so it's probably about time.
Yes.
Before dinette opens, you've got a little window. All right, Jason, give me the website and the social media for Hondo and for dinette, so people can keep track of what's going on.
So Hondo website is hondohtx.com, hondohtx.com, and the social media handle is also hondohtx. That's at hondohtx. For dinette, dinettehtx.com, dinettehtx.com, and Instagram at dinettehtx, dinettehtx. Very original, I know.
Very easy to find. Doesn't have to be original, just has to be easy to find. All right. You can follow me on Instagram at Eric Sandler. Keep it locked on culturemap.com for all the latest Houston bar and restaurant news. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next week.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.